the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Let's turn our attention to rugby, and I'm delighted to say Alan Quinlan is with us. Alan, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads. How are you?
Yeah, so you beat what's in front of you. All those old adages are true, but I think there was enough in that performance from Ireland to suggest that most of the questions we had about whether or not there was a plan, whether or not there was a style being bedded in, there is a plan, there is a style being bedded in. It hasn't been successful up to this point, but it was successful at the weekend.
Yeah, and they were obviously able to implement that Ireland on Saturday much easier than playing against the other top teams, I suppose, in the Six Nations. So it's certainly a confidence booster, Ger, and you know, to for some of the passes and the offloads and the lines of running to be good, I think, in stick, you could see the players were enjoying it, and they put a hapless Italian side away. They should have scored more points and more tries. Probably the period when Italy were down to 13 men. That was the period I was a bit disappointed, and it got a little bit flat. But they were dreadful. Ireland were very good, and you have got to give them credit for that. They do get a fair bit of stick, and the debate about whether the Irish rugby team gets enough of flack in the media has rumbled on for a couple of years, but I think they do, and they get extra scrutiny, probably more so than ever now. And, you know, I've said this, and I've been involved in games against Italy before, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you get a good scoreline and a big win, straight away the focus, even my own focus, thinks, well, Italy were dreadful, and Ireland should have scored more. So you've got to give them credit. Scrutinising the other games, the first two games, we picked out all that was wrong with the attack and decision making and anticipation around runners carrying the ball and all that kind of stuff. But on Saturday it was very, very positive.
Yeah, like I definitely felt like the first game when we had a man sent off was kind of unfair to make too much judgment on, given that so much of your attacking, a lot of it, particularly nowadays, comes from when you get turnover ball, you go quickly. Certainly, that's what they're doing with Leinster. And it looks like that's what Munster are doing under the new part of the coaching ticket recently. And when you go down to 14 men, you can't do that. The France game was very disappointing, but France are actually really, really good at rugby. That's the other side of that. Is like we managed to find a way to get into a game against a side who are the most exciting team. Okay, so we haven't seen enough Southern Hemisphere versus Northern Hemisphere teams for a whole 12 months at this point, so we don't know where they stand versus New Zealand, but they're pretty exciting.
And the problem with the French game is we're underpowered. You know, you're missing James Ryan, you're missing Conor Murray, Sexton, Doris is not there, O'Mahony's not there, Kilcoyne is not coming off the bench, and you know the depth chart isn't as strong. And when you play a physical side like France, they're very, very powerful side. And there was a lot of good stuff in the early parts of that French game. We just couldn't break them down. The James Lowe try, if he gets that, it's a conversion from the touchline, but it's possibly 10-0 to Ireland. The whole picture of the game changes. And you look at the Charles Olivon try, the first try, defensive mistake, not stopping the offload. So there are mistakes that they could look back on and say, we should have been better here in these situations. So it wasn't... it wasn't all doom and gloom, but we did highlight the fact that we kicked the ball 47 times in that game. And I've had this debate with people in the last couple of weeks. You know, if you're winning matches and you're ahead and you're putting pressure on the opposition to try and come at you and break you down, and defensively you're strong, you can kick the letter off the ball. It can frustrate the life out of the opposition, and they've got to play, and you get opportunities then in the wider parts of the pitch to get turnovers, make tackles, force knock-ons, force loose passes. And we weren't in that situation. So I think it was a panicky approach and a very pragmatic approach to try and play territory. And a lot of the kicks were good, but there were some poor kicks that just stopped us playing. And it was kind of, we were very robotic in that game. So, you know, we probably need to loosen the shackles a bit more and be more ambitious in the approach. You can do that against Italy. So, look, that's the synopsis here. That's the scenario. We can do that against Italy, and we kicked the ball 17 times. So kicking the ball 30 times less against Italy shows that if we play a bit, we have some really good players, and some of the execution on Saturday was really poor. And I suppose the main focus is Italy were dreadful, but if you look at their performance in Twickenham, they were very, very competitive against England. But defensively, they've been poor, and they've been porous against France in the first game as well. They actually played quite well against France with the ball on occasions in the first game as well. So it's certainly a mixture of both. Ireland can take a fair bit out of that game, but they've got to bring it forward into Scotland. That's where the pressure kind of ramps up again. Can they finish on a high in the Six Nations and beat Scotland and beat England at home? We'll have to wait and see, but I thought Saturday there was a lot of pleasing aspects to the game, and their execution was much better.
There was a lot of frustration, I think, Alan, over the first couple of weeks because there wasn't a clear identity to how Ireland were actually attacking a game. What was their plan on Saturday? Is there now a clear attacking identity?
Well, a clear attacking identity is sometimes you can't see that as obvious as you'd like because of the opposition, I think. You know, they tried to, against Wales and France, they did try to play a bit, but at times it was very, very static. And I think, you know, the timing of the run, their shape off phase play was really poor in some of those matches. Because at international rugby on, you very rarely see tries off first or second phase because defences are too good, they're too organised. It's really when you get into that multi-phase scenario of 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 phases, whatever, that holes appear. And you've got to really, really be accurate in the lines are running. It's not just your back line, it's all the forwards when you spread right across the field, and it's that kind of shape and attack stuff that you need to be better at. I've always said this with the Six Nations, you know, Ireland under pressure around the attack, but it's sometimes it takes a couple of matches. So the point I'm making is on Saturday, they're on the front foot. Like, their set piece has been really good, the lineup and the scrum, and their breakdown has been excellent throughout the tournament. They haven't turned the ball over at the breakdown. I think it was 98% success against France and at the weekend against Italy, winning their own ball. But it's just that attack and shape, and that's urgency to get back into position for forwards, run good lines, be an option to carry the ball rather than be a frontline runner where the ball is passed out behind you and you're no threat to the opposition defence. So I think there was examples of that on Saturday that was much better. Those lines are running. And this is stuff, Rog said it on Friday, this is stuff that you practice in training, and it all looks great in training when you're not really fatigued and you don't have the same level of contact that you're having in the match. So I think they are trying to play with a little bit more expansively, but the number, I keep going back to it against France, the number of kicks, well, it's very hard to attack if you kick that much. So we kicked the ball 30 less times on Saturday against Italy. And then with that execution and that shape and attack right across the field, it being much better. And, you know, there's times where you do have to just truck it up and give it to the forwards. But I'm always saying this, if you can put a bit of footwork on it, square up, try and get between two defenders, that ruck is quick and you can play then. So we saw a lot more positivity around that and in the shape and the attack on Saturday, which was, as I said, was pleasing.
All right, I want to play you this. It's Johnny Sexton talking about Craig Casey. Have a look.
We've come in for some flack over the last few weeks, but internally, as a group, I don't think we've ever been more confident about where we're going and what we can produce, and I mean that properly, that with the coaches that we have, with the leadership group coming out of their shells and improving their leadership, I think that this group is on the right trajectory, and I properly believe that. And those two guys are going to play a huge part, like their character, like Craig Casey, I didn't know him that well, obviously, because I've never played with him, but his attitude is, I don't think I've ever come across anyone. It kind of reminds me of what I read about Johnny Wilkinson, really, was that's the only person I can relate it to. And it's inspiring for the rest of the group, for someone like me, even at this stage of my career, I like to be last off the pitch. And I'm never last off the pitch now with him around. So, he's been brilliant. And Ryan was outstanding when he came on. He's got that energy and incredible athlete. So, the future is bright with those two leading the charge.
We'll talk about Casey in a second, because obviously he's getting a good bit of the attention. But you've been talking about Ryan Baird a long way back. Very hopeful that he would have got his run in the end of last year's Six Nations. That was after everything came back. But injuries and everything else got in the way of him. Why have you been so excited, and what did you see at the weekend from Baird?
I just think he's a brilliant footballer. He's so athletic. He's quick. He's aggressive. He's explosive. He's a bit like Caelan Doris. He has that ability to find space, to be on someone's shoulder, to have that anticipation, and to not be kind of... You need to have a structure and a plan and stick to the structure and a plan at times. But he's someone who you can give him the ball and you just think that he's going to run across field, he's going to fend someone, he's going to find a bit of space, or he's going to be on the shoulder of somebody if they make a line break. And plus, and he's carries off nine. He explodes into those carries. You know, physically, he probably needs to get a little bit bigger and stronger, and that will come with age and time. To play at the very, very top level when you're coming up against the likes of Willems and Bernard Leroux, the French second rows. If Ryan Baird is in there, that's a different story. And the step up to international level is different. So, he's been kind of slowly, he's been with the group for probably a year now, and he's been phased into it. And as you said, the injuries in November probably stopped him getting more involvement. So I just think he's an intelligent footballer who brings loads of energy. And I think the endorsement from Johnny Sexton there, that's exactly what you want within your squad. You know, I remember when I played with Munster and young guys coming through, it excites everyone when the players themselves start talking about these guys, what they bring, and the real energy and an attitude as well, you know. So I think he's a very, very good player, and he still has a lot to learn and probably needs to be a bit more physically imposing, but that will come with time. But
Sexton really damped down the hype around Craig Casey by comparing him to Johnny Wilkinson as well.
Yeah, it's as you said, it's the attitude. That's what you want. It's hard to... You can't coach attitude in guys. Of course, they can learn to be more professional and understand what's required and the hard nature of international rugby and the effort levels that everybody's going to, and the commitment that players at that level, the top players, make. But to get an endorsement like that from Johnny Sexton for Craig Casey and for Ryan Baird is brilliant for them. And I would suspect it's not just paying, patting them on the back and trying to build their confidence. These guys are, and that's what you want from young players, Jerry. You want them to come in with no baggage. They're not worried about what happened in the Five Nations in 1990 or the World Cup in 2019. It's not in their mind at all. They're just thinking, I'm in here with Ireland now. I'm full of confidence, full of self-belief. And there's an envy in me looking back at my career when I started off with Ireland, and I did a piece on Saturday in the Indo just talking about the nerves, the fear of failure, the ability to think, I'm totally out of my comfort zone here with Munster. That's where I'm comfortable. That's where I kind of trust everyone around me and I could play better. And I'm nervous a little bit with Ireland and worried a little bit. And that's sometimes in the individual. But when you see these guys bouncing around the place, they're full of confidence and energy, and they will have setbacks. They'll have bad games. They'll make poor decisions. They'll be criticized, and it's how they deal with that. But having that sort of maturity very young is a positive thing. And it does bring a positive energy into the squad. So it doesn't surprise me about Craig Casey. I know his dad well. His dad was involved in Shannon for years when I was there. Craig was only a little baby when I was playing with Shannon. Mossy Lawlers, his uncle, who I played with when Munster, was a great player, Mossy. So I've heard about Craig for a long, long time, and I know him. And it doesn't surprise me that that's the attitude. He's continuously working on his game. And
does he have
to
stay?
It's still very early days.
Yeah, but does he have to stay in the squad now for the Scotland game? Because that excitement and that level of excitement that they bring, there's no point in having that around the camp if it's not actually on the bench and ready to come into the game. Like the Italy game is great and it's a great opportunity, but really it would feel like a lost opportunity for Ireland if we didn't include this now for the next two games.
Does he have to stay there? Well, that's the conundrum for Andy Farrell, because if he brings Conor Murray back in and puts him on the bench and Gibson Park starts or vice versa, then, and they were to lose in Scotland, you're kind of saying we're losing this opportunity to expose these guys to keep building them. I would try and keep him there. I think if he's bringing that much confidence and energy, I'm not sure on it, Ger, because I'd be lying if I said, I'm split on that one, because I think you're really going to need experience and a real guile and a physicality and to go over and beat Scotland. And maybe if we don't win the game, you have to win these Six Nations games and have a dreadful start. So it's a must-win game. So experience is something that does get you across the line, but that'll probably frustrate the fans then and supporters of Irish rugby if he's not involved, if Ryan Baird is not involved. So I'm not really sure. I'm not 100% sure, but I'd probably be leaning for keep these guys involved. And, worst case scenario, we lose the game, but at least you're exposing these guys to more international rugby. And we're in the middle of that World Cup cycle, and we've always been critical, and people have been critical on the outside of us peaking at the wrong times and all that. But there is a massive pressure, and I keep reiterating this point, and that comes from the IRFU as well. Yeah. And it's down to brass tacks, winning, getting money. We're in the middle of the pandemic, so I don't think anyone from the IRFU will be influencing Andy Farrell and telling him who he should pick, but it is a must-win game and they'll have to sit down, and it'll be interesting. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that coach's meeting if Conor Murray is fit and available, but he hasn't played in a couple of weeks now. So
when we talked when we talked pre-tournament about that and about selection, and I was like asking you about Tadhg Furlong, had barely played, you were like, get him straight back into the squad, straight back into the team as quickly as you can. With Carberry, is it a different scenario because of the length of layoff was even longer than the year that we had? Or again, there is somebody who, if he was coming off the bench, you'd feel much, much more confident from an Irish perspective.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. And I think I'd be more cautious, and I think most Irish rugby people would be, that give him a couple of more weeks of being involved with Munster, putting on the boots, doing the warm-ups, all that match preparation, because of the nature of the injury that he had and the way he broke down the last time. It's always going to be a risk. Him being on the coming off the bench the other night was a risk. I think they've taken a long time, and they've probably taken an extra period of time to make sure. So if he's fit and ready, maybe he goes back in and trains with them. I don't know, but I wouldn't be in the same position as rushing him back. Tadhg Furlong is a world-class player who I think there was a real need to get him back in there. I'd be a bit more cautious with Joey Carberry, to be fair, and I think they will be too, because there's a bigger picture of trying to get him back up and running, and there'd probably be a nervousness around if he broke down with Ireland, or God forbid something happened to him in Ireland training. It would be a real, real negative.
Yeah, okay. It was great to see him back at the weekend. We wish him all the best and really hope that there is no more breakdowns. Is this the jammiest triple crown in the history of triple crowns?
Well, I want to ask you and Owen, and this was kind of been on my mind since the weekend, is what's your assessment of Wales now? And did you receive any credit for igniting the Welsh Dragon to get him a triple crown?
Somebody asked me, it's between me and a couple of others for Warren Gatland's selection for the Lions. I'm available if Warren needs me to go and help with motivational tactics.
You were the most hated men in Wales there for a couple of days.
They love us now.
You're quite popular now, yeah.
My point at the start of the tournament was Wales were in a bit of a shambles, and we needed to take that opportunity not to, to drag them into the deep water and bring that set up, the chaos that they had presided over the previous year. But we didn't do that. We had a man sent off, and obviously the rest is history. Scotland, playing really well against them, have a man sent off, and they win that game. And then England, I don't know what England were thinking. Even when they got back into the game and drew level in the second half, they were dropping passes, they were committing stupid errors at the breakdown, giving away penalties. It was a bizarre England performance.
It was, and Eddie Jones hasn't picked foreign players at the start of this tournament. I think he picked a lot of the Saracens players who were incredibly undercooked regarding match practice, and they haven't got up to speed, and they've shown that. And I thought Italy played really well against England at Twickenham, and England were really poor. They were really poor against Scotland the first game, and they showed glimpses and sparks of what they can do on Saturday against Wales, but they're not where we expected them to be at, England. And that's not taking anything away from Wales. I think there was a couple of decisions in that game that very, very big controversial decisions. That quick penalty that Dan Biggar does, a crossfield kick with Josh Adams. I think if I was one of the English players there, I'd feel very hard done by with that. They did spread out on one side, so maybe it wasn't as bad as it seemed. They should have been more alert to that. I thought it was a knock-on for Reece Amos. I thought it hit his hands. He runs past the ball. It hits the back of his leg. He didn't have control of the ball. I think there were two. There was 14 points there that, in my opinion, shouldn't have been given. Wales would have kicked the penalty if they didn't do the crossfield kick. But it's crazy to think where Wales are at, because what you said at the start was reality. And I'd been speaking to Welsh people I know, played against, you know, I was chatting to Scott Quinnell a couple of before the tournament, and Scott always puts a brave face on it, but they were very, very nervous about where they would end up in the Six Nations. And Wayne Pivac's job was on the line. I think if they had a bad Six Nations, he would have probably not survived. And it's incredible. It's all about creating that bit of luck, getting that bit of luck, then creating it and building on it. And I think they went out on Saturday after those first two games, you say, you know, Ireland probably should have and could have beaten them with 14 men. Scotland should have beaten them. But they showed a lot of character there. And yeah, the word character comes into sport a lot. But they looked like a team on Saturday that was, they got through that really rough period of maybe November and last year's Six Nations, and they've kind of crossed the line. They looked way more confident in what they were trying to do. And aside from those refereeing decisions, I thought they were outstanding with the way they played.
Their forwards were really good.
They were brilliant. They were brilliant, and they deserve it now. And I think it's an incredible turnaround. They're probably a little bit shocked themselves, the Welsh public, but you know, it just goes to show there's some brilliant Welsh players there, and they found form. And that's the point I was making about experience. You know, sometimes experience can reignite and leadership within a group, and that's what Wales have seemed to have done, and they were outstanding. But England and Eddie Jones have, I think he's made mistakes with the players he's picked. I think there's players who are not in the English squad who are probably playing week in, week out in the Premiership, and that's probably the angle he should have went to the start of this tournament.
It's bizarre that he didn't take that opportunity to make his depth chart much bigger and just say to the Saracens lads, go off, play some rugby, get promoted and get back into the Premiership, and you're all going to be part of my plans, don't worry about it. Like, in that case,
yeah, in hindsight, look, hindsight's a great thing, and if England had started off well and beat Scotland and you know, I think, and beat Wales at the weekend, they'd be the ones who were in the driving seat. But someone like Sam Simmons for Exeter, and I think there's been calls for him for a couple of years, he's scoring tries every week now in the Premiership with Exeter, and he just doesn't get a look in. When you look at, you know, Billy Vunipola played better on Saturday, but I still think him and a number of Saracens guys just look undercooked.
Yeah.
They don't look as fit as they should be for international rugby. But England still did a lot of good things on Saturday. And I can guarantee you this, in 2 years' time in France, this won't have any bearing, because England will be strong again. They are a powerhouse, and they've incredible players. So it's a blip, and he will get criticism for it. And but it just goes to show that after the Scotland game, a lot of people were saying these players are not match fit, and they couldn't be. They haven't played rugby in 2 months, some of them, and they've lost form as well. And that's shown.
Good stuff, Alan. Thanks a million. Cheers.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.